Good morning, happy Sabbath. Okay, we are together this morning. Would you stand with me as we read from the Word? Then he said to them all, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. The Word of God. Please be seated. One of our pastoral families just became parents a few months ago. I know, you're like, what? Yeah, we keep secrets around here. No. Ben and Calmany, they became dog parents. Everybody's like, wait, what news are you breaking down right now, Pastor? What's happening? They're dog parents. They got a little dog. They adopted Obi from Canada. Obi came a long way. And when Obi wasn't here yet and they had just made this decision, it was like the biggest decision they'd ever made. They were so excited. All they could do was talk about the arrival of Obi. Obi is coming. We're going to be parents. As if we're going to be parents. We know what we're going to have. We're going to get this. They were getting gifts. We gave them a gift. It was amazing. And Obi came in this beautiful dog, just gorgeous, with so much life, vivacious, and alive. And they were so, you know, and Calmany and Ben was talking to me, and they said, hey, Icky, we've got to get you to get a dog. And I said, yeah, it's hard. I've got a wife. As long as I have her, we're not getting any animals. I said, no, you need a dog. And Calmany's like, you need a dog. Just bring them over to the house. They'll fall in love. So I brought Melanie over. Melanie, sure enough, fell in love. Oh, Obi was a beautiful blessing. Fast forward a few months. I see Ben. Ben, how's it going? Ben is carrying this big dog around like it's his child. You know, it's like, yeah, he's just petting it, you know, like this. The thing has legs to walk, but no, Ben's going to carry it like this. I love it. Oh, I love this. I love being a dog parent. This is the best. It's amazing. And I'm like, wow, this is so contagious. I want to be Ben. I want to have a dog. Look at his, he won't even let the thing walk. Later that same day, I saw Calmany. And she was walking the dog outside of this. I pulled his head, Cal. She said, hey. I said, how's it going? Yeah, it's good, it's good. And I thought I'd ask, Calmany, how is it being this parent? And she gave me the look. She didn't give me a positive or a negative answer. She gave me a neutral answer, which usually means it's a negative, right? How are things going? Yeah, it's going. It's going. And she had the look. And every parent knows this look. You know what I'm talking about, parents? Yeah, like I'm very familiar. I get what Calmany was saying. It's an expression that she gives about this tragedy that is so beautiful and is good and amazing. And also, this is exactly what parenting is like, isn't it? The gains and the losses that we have to weigh out. The things that are amazing about this process that we have sacrificed of ourselves that we can no longer do, like watch normal TV. I get it. When I saw that look in her face, I knew what she was saying because it changes everything that Ben and Calmany does. Just like parents, when kids come into your life, it changes the way you travel, it changes the way you eat, it changes the way you budget, it changes the way you sleep, the way you breathe. Your existence is no longer the same once you have this new thing. You are no longer the same person, and there is so much you didn't anticipate prior to becoming or prior to the shifting of this experience, before becoming a parent. I think this shift is important. I think the gain and the losses is important for us to reflect upon. I also think that the shift here is probably the closest way we can describe or understand the book of Luke chapter 9, verse 23. When Jesus says, then he said to them, if anyone wants to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. So I think it would be helpful for us to take a look at this, like just a small chiastic framework here for us to understand the verse and what Jesus is trying to say. We recognize right off the back that stanza 1 and 5 goes together and stanza 2 and 4 go together. And the pinnacle there is right in the center of what Jesus is saying. This is what matters most to everything else. So we just fed the 5,000. Then Jesus, he makes a proclamation, or Peter makes a proclamation about Jesus. He says, you're the Messiah. And Jesus says, okay, good. And then Peter says, hey, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. Jesus, then he says, I'm going to have to die. And then he's in this place where he tells them about what it means for them to follow along in his footsteps. So in the chiastic frame, we see 1 and 5. If anyone wants, follow me. Become my followers, take up their cross daily. And all this happens when they learn how to deny themselves. 1 and 5. If you want, this is an invitation. There were many rabbis in Jesus' time. There were many messiahs in Jesus' time. This was not a new thing. There were many rebellions who were arising, and they were trying to coalesce force and power and weapons so that they can overcome Rome. Rome is very familiar with messiahs. Jesus' people were very familiar with rabbis. There were many groups of disciples. But Jesus said, there's a particular characteristic about following me. If you are to be my disciples, you have to be about more than what everyone else is doing. There's a very specific and a unique characteristic about being my followers. Jesus here is suggesting that there is an invitation to follow him in a very unique and special way. Now, this is interesting to me because Jesus is here to do some great reconciliatory work for the God of the universe. And next week, we're going to sit with that in the Easter service, where we've got a silent Sabbath. And we know that this kind of love, this experiential, deep, unconditional love is the one that happens when the world is transformed and there are people that are saved. But that's a large cosmic picture, and here Jesus is talking about a very specific thing. He says, if you want to be my followers, not just if you want to be saved, but if you want to be my followers. Dare I say there are many people who are going to be saved who were not Jesus' followers. There's a very unique and special way that Jesus calls us to when he says, follow me. And I think sometimes in church, if I could say, because I'm a church member, part of the family, sometimes for us, we minimalize our salvational work to be done in this world. We ask questions that are more spiritual than they are more practical. We say things like, well, what can I do to be saved? What must I do and what must I not do to be saved? Because I want to be able to know how to be saved. And once we get there, we're okay. My life is balanced. I've got a good job. I've got a good kids. I've got a spouse. And I've got the saved bit piece in. But Jesus doesn't want us to live just trying to be saved. I don't think the church should every week come in and out and ask, are we teetering on being saved or not saved? That's not the question Jesus posts here. He says, I want followers who are not just gonna minimalize the idea of salvation, the platform. I want somebody who's gonna follow me all the way through. Someone who's going to go to the next level. Someone who says, I'm with you, Jesus, when I'm in church and when I'm at my job and when I'm with my kids and when I'm sitting in that traffic. I'm with you 100%. Follow. It's an invitation. Not everybody saved are going to be followers of Jesus the way. And yet, to follow Jesus the way is a very unique and special calling. The church today, this is our task, to follow Christ. It is what we call to and what we desire. But it's not enough for us just to say, we are the saved, or we want to be saved, or you know, that kind of conversation that just goes in circles and circles and circles. What we ought to say is, what might a saved agent look like in the world today? What might we look like living in our world today? And then begin to live that way. Stretch and push and move until we are all agents of this kingdom that looks different from the kingdom by which we are actually living in. It's an invitation. You are invited to the party. Dare we follow, dare we call to the call of Christ. Now in the second stanza, we've got become my followers. And of course, take up your cross daily. Become my followers and take up your cross daily. Interesting term, because when we think of the cross, it's so flooded in our world today. Everybody wears a cross, everybody. You don't even have to believe in Jesus and you're wearing crosses. Rappers wear crosses, gangsters wear crosses, rock stars wear crosses. Everybody wears crosses these days. There's a cross in every corner. There's a cross in the States. We just see it all over the place. And oftentimes when we see the cross, there's this idea or the connotation of like hope and forgiveness and salvation, right? It's a positive connotation. But if we think about these particular disciples, this was pre-resurrection. So they didn't have the resurrection to look back at. They didn't have the hope to touch. This was pre that. So the cross had a different connotation to the disciples than it did to us today. For them, they were looking at it from Rome's perspective. This was a tool of persecution. Rebels were put on this thing. 71 BCE, when Spartacus lost to the Roman general, he and 6,000 of his followers were hung on a cross. A century later, Nero was persecuting and crucifying Christians for fires that were happening across Rome. So the idea of the cross to the disciples in this moment, at least, was not one of hope and forgiveness and joy and renewal. It was a very heavy, dark, and difficult thing. Consider today, instead of wearing crosses, Jesus might have said something like, pick up your electric chair, come follow me. It's weird. Pick up your noose, the noose, and come follow me. Pick up your lethal injection and come follow me. Those are all tools of shame in our contemporary world. They have dark histories. They're absolute, and they're difficult to deal with. How do we deal with this difficulty? How do we deal with such a challenging invitation from Jesus to follow? If you want this invitation to be my followers, pick up the difficulty of a heavy laden world and the persecution thereof and follow me. Well, Jesus answers this for himself in verse 4, where he says, let them deny themselves. Let them deny themselves. Here, I think, is the thesis of what Jesus was saying. This is the point. This is the whole thing. He says, hey, if you want to be my followers, if you want to have the ability to carry the cross every day, get up and do it, you've got to be able to deny yourself. And so I think I want to spend a little bit of time here this morning on denying ourselves. And for context, it's imperative how we understand this particular thing. The idea here is it comes from the Greek word aponeomai. The root word form that it comes from is apo. Apo means to separate, right? To take apart. But this particular word in the Greek being used means to deny and use with the connotation of between relationships. Same word, Greek word that Peter uses to deny Jesus just a little later, right, in the story. So we see that the denial is of a relational association. This is not, when we say self-denial, hate for oneself, or repress, or lose, or renounce oneself. When we think of this word deny, I don't want you thinking of you losing yourself and getting rid of yourself. You are the best you when you are you. I give that to marriage counseling all the time with my young couples. They come in and we do exercises. And I always tell them, I say, hey, this week, your exercise is to spend time with you, loving you. Go out and do something you love to do. Because in the bigger span of life, when you're busy with your partner and your kids and your work, we often tend to lose ourselves in everything. But the very thing that we are is what draws people to us. So it's important for us to continue to hold on to who we are. So the denial here is not a self-hatred or a losing of yourself or a repressing or a renouncing, woe is me, oh, I'm so bad, Jesus, forgive me, God. No, it's not that. If we're thinking in the sense of arpaneomai, we are thinking in the sense of relationship. Self-denial then is the intentional disowning of the self and stepping away from the relationship with the self as primary. Now we're talking. Jesus is not making a statement about whether the self is bad, but who we are mostly associated with. Who is our primary association? Is it us, or is Jesus the one in which we are most connected to? It's imperative that when we deny, what we are saying is we are removing ourselves from being the primary association of ourselves. We can love ourselves, not renounce ourselves, and still not be the primary association of our feelings, of our experiences, of our decisions. And therein lies the space, the vacuum by which Jesus fills. 2018. We went to Cambodia, and I took the whole family. We went down there. We were working with an NGO called RAW, and they were working with villagers and helping to do something that hadn't been done there, which was use the resource of bamboo to build houses and huts and towns, because that's a really good, strong material that's reusable. It's a good source, a resource. And so they would build it this way. And then you can come in and you can help along and hang out and talk with and be a part of that process. So I took my family, and one day we were down in the village and we were working away, and Michaela was playing with some of the other kids that came, as well as some of the villager kids, and they were all just hanging out, her and Leo. This is 2018, so she was much younger. She was six, I think. I believe she was around 6 or 7 years old. And while they were playing, she was running her hands along the bamboo and she got a splinter. And it wasn't like the biggest splinter, but it was just enough of a splinter, and bamboo can really cut in there. But it was fairly surface. And I was working across the village on one of the other buildings that we were putting together, and I just heard the screams of a broken soul. I said, oh, wow, who's dying in the village? Someone comes running over, it's your daughter. What? I book it over there. I said, what happened? Did she fall in somewhere? Did she break her leg? They said, no, she's got a splinter. What? She got a splinter. And I came over to my daughter, and she was holding her finger, and she was weeping and weeping and wailing. And I said, baby, what happened? She said, daddy, I got a splinter. And I said, oh, sweetheart, let me see. And she said, look at it. And sure enough, there it was. This is this bamboo splinter. The tip was just beneath the flesh there. And I began to reach for it. I said, baby, let me pull. She said, no. I said, whoa, child of Satan, where did that come from? No. And she said, daddy, don't touch it. I said, baby, we got to pull it out. It's going to get infected. We're not in our home country. I can't get, I don't know what kind of medicines I get you. Let daddy take care of it. No, daddy, don't you do it. And then Melanie's over there, and she's like, oh, baby, can mommy? Mommy's a nurse. I've got little tweezers. Mel always has tweezers. I don't know why. I got tweezers. I can get it out. She said, no, mommy, no. The villagers come over, and they say, would you like us to hold her down? While we pull it out, I was like, I'm not ready for that step yet. Someone else comes over, and they got candy. They're like, Michaela, look, it's candy. They're like, we'll distract her. And she's like, oh, candy. And they're distracting her. As soon as I touch her finger, no. And then, you know, we got to the place where she's crying, and she's weeping, and but we had to remove this thing. And so finally, I was like, okay, villagers, come on. Everybody, come on. And the village comes around, and everybody starts holding my daughter down, right? And I've got her arm like this, and Melanie, the nurse, is working on it, and this girl is pulling everyone all over the place. I'm like, we need to do some kind of demonic removal while we're here. The villagers, one lady says, oh, your daughter's so strong. I said, I know, it's the tongue and blood. I'm proud and I'm scared. Hold on. Get that puppy out. And just immediately the sobbing stops. There's relief. We tie it up, and later that day I see her just sitting where we were staying, kind of like mulling around a little bit. And I said, sweetheart, what's up? She says, Daddy, it's not that I didn't trust you. I was just scared. And I said, yeah, and also you didn't trust me. She says, no, I trust you, Daddy. It's just, it was scary, and it was her. I didn't know what was going to happen. I think about Jesus and his words of denial in association to a relationship with yourself. My daughter, in the moment filled with fear and circumstances, believed that she could only trust in herself to get her from where she was at to a better place. But it was obvious to everyone else that she in herself didn't have the agency to remove what needed to happen in her life in order for her to get to a better place. And I think sometimes that Jesus is saying, you've got to trust me, because in and of yourself, you do not have the agency to get to the next place. But if you trust me, if you deny yourself primary association with yourself, and you relate to me, and you grant me your trust, you will be able to pick up your cross every day and come follow me. Michaela Splinter reminds me of just how I get into my own fixes, where I'm like, I'm the one who's going to fix this issue. Trust no one but myself. I go to church, I praise the Lord, but really, I'm going to rely on me to get from one place to the next. And Jesus says, you've got to give me space to speak into your life, so that when you're in a moment of fear, or when you're in a moment of difficulty and struggle, when you've got to make the tough choices, you have an agency of someone that is foundational in the unconditional love of God, who will not only speak truth to you, but who will point you and move you in the direction by which you and I need to go. In these moments, it may have felt inconvenient to trust her parents, but it was only going to be from the working of her parents that she was going to get out of the place where she needed to get out of. In our spiritual formation, it may feel like God is inconvenient. And we can be honest in this place. I've said it before. God is inconvenient. And that's okay for us to say. Turn to somebody and say, God is inconvenient. That's okay for us to say. That's okay. This is the whole point of this. This is the gains and losses. In our gains, there will be losses. God is inconvenient. Absolutely. Anything that we want in life to do is going to cause inconvenience to us. Anything. So the question or the point has never been whether God is or is not inconvenient, but whether the inconvenience is worth it. And Jesus says, indeed, if you lay your life down for me, for my sake, there you will find it. Denying the self every day in humility and trusting God as primary relationship means we will be able to carry different words. Some of you came in with like positive words today. Some of you were ready. Some of you came in and said, praise the Lord, love and hope and joy. And others of us came into this place just barely making it in here. And maybe you wrote a word like depressed, broke, tired, broke. That was probably my word if I had to put one down. It's always my word. My wife hates that. Broke. We all have words that we come in with into this place. All of us are carrying these different words. But when we are in a trusting relationship with God, God begins to do some beautiful things in us, and we utilize that same trust between all of us, those who are on the mountaintop experience and those who are in the valleys, those who are facing the best parts of their life right now and those who don't know what tomorrow brings. But we utilize the same trust in the same God that does the same good work in all of us. We utilize this trust in the same God by giving our words to Him, whether a great word or a lowly word. But when we give our word and our lives and we lay it back down, denying ourselves, there in that place of death and depth, we find our lives again. Here's the gospel news. When we choose to deny ourselves as primary, when we choose to lay it down our lives for God, God always has a resurrection story for us. There's always resurrection on the other side. There's always life. There will be something that we'll grapple with. But God always comes through. So the question is, I guess Jesus poses it to him in that passage. What are we willing to lose in order to gain? What are you willing to lose about yourself in order to gain this beautiful followership of Jesus? What has been your struggle? What has been your push? What has been the thing that you've grappled with because it's yours to control? What do you deny in order to join the followership of Jesus? Maybe it's ego, maybe it's hurt, maybe it's unforgiveness, maybe it's greed, maybe it's a sense of self-protection, maybe it's convenience. We all have something to deny and lay down before Christ. So I told you last week, story about my dad and gardening and how I went to high school and it actually worked in my behalf. But growing up, I never wanted to go to work with my dad. I just make that clear and official in case anybody thought, why? He's such a good son. He goes to work with his dad and does mowing the lawns. Nope, not one day of my life did I ever want to go. Never, nope, won't do it again. My dad every day would wake up and have to figure out ways to get me into his truck to take me to work with him. And so, you know, it'd be like, hey, son, time to go to work. And my dad and my mom are very different. My dad and mom wake us up in very different ways. My mom likes the shock factor. So she likes to pull the blankets off and start whipping us. Because, right? I'm up. I'm okay, mom, I'm sorry. And my dad is, you know, he's like subtle and lukewarm. He comes in, you know, he rubs your back. He'll make an omelet. He'll come, you know, he'll talk. Hey, how are you today? I know you've been sleeping, but it's 2:00 PM. Maybe you'd like to get up sometime. That's my dad, right? So he'd come in and be like, hey, we gotta go mow some lawns and cut some trees. And never once did I jump out of bed and say, yes, dad, let's go. My favorite, let's do it. Never, ever, ever. But my dad would try everything. And he knew how much I loved 7-Eleven, because 7-Eleven back in the 1900s used to have video games inside of them. I don't remember that. The arcade games. And like, hey, if you come with me, we'll stop at 7-Eleven to play some video games. And I'd be like, yes. But then, dad, what after? After that, what happens? And I'd be like, we're going to go mow some lawns. No, I'm not going, dad. Hey, son, if you come with me today, we'll go to the beach. Oh, I love the beach. Yes, Dad, yes. But then, after the beach, after we have a good time, what are we doing next? We got to go mow some lawns. Nope, I'm not going. I can't do it, Dad. This was in a time when we didn't have cell phones. And my dad knew something. He knew that I could stay at home and be comfortable with my older sister. But being so young, if something happened to us, there would be no way to contact him. We were also undocumented, so we wouldn't be calling the police or the ambulance. So he knew that even though it's comfortable at home, the safest place to be was with him out at work. The safest place, the best place for his kids, even though we liked being home, was to be out in the field with him. And when we're out in the field and it's hot, it's the summertime, it's 110 degrees out, and we're mowing lawns and we're beat up and we're tired, even in that place, we were safe because we were near our Father. Jesus calls us to deny ourselves, and we might say, but God, it's so inconvenient to my life. I'm so comfortable the way things are right now. Why can't we just keep doing this? I'll come to church every so often. I'll pay a little bit of tithe. You know, we'll sing some songs, even the ones I don't know. I'll just do it. But then let me go and continue being me through the week. And God says, no, I need you to follow. And it's going to be inconvenient. And it's going to be out of your space, and you're not going to be as comfortable as you'd like to be. But the best place to be is not in the comfort zone. It's out where Jesus is. My dad took us to work. Not because he liked us working so much. Once in high school, he was dropping me back off at high school, and You know, y'all see my dad. He's like this big. You know, he's hugging my leg. And he says, son. I said, what? He says, he looks up to me, you know, because he's such a small man. He holds me and he says, son, it's cool of the eve. Just before him and my mom get back in a car to drive all the way back down to L.A. And he says, I'm sorry. I said, for what, dad? He says, I'm sorry if I've ever embarrassed you. I know you never had wanted to go to work, and I never wanted you to go to work. And I'm sorry if you don't have the nicest stuff, but please know, Dad, I've always loved you, and I would do anything for you. And as my dad does, he starts to weep and cry. And because I'm his son, I start weeping and crying. And we hold each other in the fog and the cool of the night, and he gets in his car and he takes off, and I can't. But remember those nights and think about a dad who always wanted us in the field with him. Not because it was more comfortable, but because it was the best place to be for us. God is calling us out, not just to live comfortable Christian lives, but to deny ourselves primary association. Put him as primary, to hear his voice, and then to follow Jesus into the field. And though that may feel like a death of sorts where we are giving convenience up, it is in that place that you and I will find resurrection. Be well.